Clinton's puffy, heavy-jowled face was like a stone wall, but after several tense seconds, he nodded minutely.
"Very well."
Trenaire managed to show no trace of the profound relief that grudging acquiescence engendered as he surveyed the other three faces around the table. "I think we have two separate but related problems. First, we must decide how Mother Church and the Council are going to deal with these." He tapped the parchment documents again. "And second, we must decide what long-term course of action Mother Church and the Council can pursue in the face of our current military embarrassment." Ducairn wasn't quite certain how he refrained from snorting derisively. Trenaire's separate but related problems just happened to constitute the greatest threat the Church of God Awaiting had faced in the near millennium since the creation itself. Hearing the Chancellor talk about them as if they were no more than two more in the succession of minor administrative decisions the group of four had been required to make over the past decade or so was ludicrous. Yet what Trenaire had said was also true, and the Chancellor was probably the only one of them who could genuinely hope to manage Clinton. The Treasurer General reached out and drew the nearest document closer. He had no need to consult its text, of course. That much was already branded indelibly into his memory, but he ran his fingertips across the seals affixed to it. Under other circumstances, it would have been unexceptionable enough. The language was the same as that which had been used scores, thousands of times before to announce the demise of one monarch, duke, or other feudal magnate, and the assumption of his titles by his heir. Unfortunately, the circumstances were anything but normal in this instance, for the monarch in question, Harald VII of Carus, had not died in bed. "And there is that one minor difference between this writ of succession and all the others," Ducairn reminded himself, letting his fingers trace the largest and most ornate seal of all. By both law and ancient tradition, no succession was valid or final until it had been confirmed by Mother Church, which was supposed to mean by the Council of Vicars. But this writ of succession already bore Mother Church's seal, and Ducairn's eyes slipped to the second and, in his opinion, more dangerous succession writ. Neither of them could have been more politely phrased. No one could point to a single overtly defiant statement. Yet the seal affixed to the first writ of succession belonged to the Archbishop of Carus, and in the eyes of Mother Church, there was no Archbishop of Carus. Eric Dinis, who had held that office, had been stripped of it and was currently awaiting execution for the crimes of treason, malfeasance, and the encouragement of heresy. The Council of Vicars had not yet even considered a replacement for him, but the Kingdom of Carus clearly had, as the second writ made abundantly clear. It was, for all the blandness of its phrasing, a clear-cut declaration of war against the entire Church of God Awaiting. And, just in case anyone had failed to notice, there was always the third document, the original copy of Stainer's letter to Grand Vicar Eric. Ducairn was certain that the blandness of the two writs of succession, the contrast between their traditional phraseology and terminology and Stainer's fiery letter, was intentional. Their very everyday normality not only underscored the deadly condemnation of Stainer's accusations, but also made it clear that Carus intended to continue about its own affairs, its own concerns, without one iota of deference to the desires or commands of the Church it had chosen to defy. No, not simply defy. That was the reason the writs of succession had been written as they had, sent as they had. They were the proof that Carus was prepared to ignore Mother Church, and in many ways, that was even more deadly.